I know I've been changed. Oh, I know I've been changed. Oh, I know I've been changed. The angels in the heavens gonna sign my name. The angels in the heavens gonna sign my name. I know I've got religion. Lord knows I'm not ashamed. The Holy Ghost is my witness, and the angels gonna sign my name.
Sign my name.
Oh,
I
know I've been changed. Oh, I know I've been changed. Oh, I know I've been changed. The angels in the heavens gonna sign my name. Angels in the heavens gonna sign my name. I know I've been converted. Lord knows I've been redeemed. You can wake me up in the midnight hour. I'm gonna tell you just what I see. Oh, I know I've been changed. Oh, I know I've been changed. Oh, I know I've been changed. The angels in the heavens gonna sign my name.
So that was I Know I've Been Changed, which is the title track from Aaron Neville's latest album. And it's a very great pleasure to welcome Aaron Neville himself to the music show.
Thanks a lot.
Let's talk about this new album first. It reads and sounds like a tribute to all of the American roots musics that you've grown up with, and particularly gospel. Is that fair?
I guess you could say that. You know, I mean, it was just me recording a gospel album, and we just picked songs that we picked from like about 50 songs, and we thought these were the cream of the crop, which all of them were great songs. So I'll have to probably do it again a couple more times. You know?
But you could have picked a lot of different songs, but the ones you've chosen are mostly songs that you would have known for a long time.
Yeah, well, some of these I knew for a long time, but some I was just introduced to them for this project.
Could we talk perhaps about the older songs? Which are the ones that you've known since childhood?
I first was introduced to Sam Cooke when I was about 13 years old. He was singing with the Soul Stirrers. And one of the songs is I'm So Glad Trouble Don't Last Always.
And Sam Cooke has been important to you ever since. One of the standout tracks on Yellow Moon is A Change Is Going to Come.
Yeah, this matter of fact, I recorded that three times, three different times, yeah. And we're still waiting for change to come. And,
yes, indeed. What about some of the other songs? Did you choose them for the songs themselves or because of their associations? I'm thinking, for instance, of associations with Odetta.
Well, yeah, I definitely like the Odetta things, like the meeting at the building. That was one that, matter of fact, if you see the pictures on the CD cover, but the old church.
That's the building itself.
Yeah, well, that's when I, you know, we had a scout looking for locations to do the photo shoot. When I saw that, I said I wanted to use that for that particular song. Meeting at the building will soon be over.
Yes.
And I like all of them. When I work out in the gym, I put it on and it's like about a 47-minute run of music, you know. So I know I've done 47 minutes on it. Treadmill.
Well, if I were the sort of person who went to the gym, which I'm sorry to say I'm not, I think I would become distracted by some of this music.
No, it just helps me to keep going, you know, just like, you know, a hamster on a wheel, you know.
Well, let's talk about the sound of this album, in particular the New Orleans sound, which is summed up so well in the piano playing.
Alan Toussaint.
Alan Toussaint, yeah, who you have known since school.
Since school days, yeah. Grammar school.
That in itself says so much about New Orleans music.
Yeah. Well, the thing about Alan being on the album was like a 50-year anniversary, because he recorded my first time I recorded was 1960 with Minute Records, and he did the recording.
That's incredible. And he's known as the godfather of New Orleans music. Was he like that at school? Was he organizing things?
Yeah, he was. I mean, like, when we first started, myself and Ernie Cato and Irma Thomas and Bennett Spellman, we used to go by his house and play the music and get ready for us to go in the studio to do it, you know?
The other sound that is important on this record, as on any Aaron Neville record, is your voice.
Oh, thank you.
Did you always have this voice? Did you always have the falsetto and the vibrato?
Yeah, I mean, I had to work at the vibrato, you know, listen to different other singers and try and stuff out. But my brother Art, who was one of my first inspirations, had a doo-wop group. But, you know, in those days were like the voices were the synthesizers. You know, they had the bass singer, they had the harmonizers, then they had the guy that hit the high note. Everybody wanted to hit the high note, you know. And I was able to do it.
And I guess this is where Sam Cooke comes in yet again.
Oh, no doubt, man. Like, I heard Sam Cooke when I was 13 years old for the first time, and he just mesmerized me.
And other singers as well, Otis Redding.
Well, yeah, before that, I mean, I had Nat King Cole. My mother and dad were real big Nat King Cole fans.
Right.
And I used to sing my way into the movies, singing Mona Lisa, one of his songs, Pretend. And then had Clyde McFadder, who sang with the Drifters and the Dominoes back in the days.
There's also the gospel tradition, which runs not quite in parallel with this, but they're almost interwoven, aren't they?
It is, really.
And they affect each other, these traditions.
Well, yeah, you know, I think they borrow from each other, like, you know? Because, like, back in the days, if you listen to Ray Charles, you could hear the church in his music, you know, most definitely.
Mm. Yes. What did people like Sam Cooke and Curtis Mayfield and Marvin Gaye do to the gospel tradition, would you say?
You know, the thing about it, anything they sang was gospel, you know, regardless if it was, you know, what it was. Like, I heard Marvin Gaye did a version of Eyes on a Sparrow, you know, and he just tore it up. And even Nat King Cole, I heard him sing with spiritual, and it was like Elvis Presley. He sings some great spirituals. So, like, you know, it's all intertwined.
So you're saying that you can put spiritual words to anything, and you can also sing words which are not obviously spiritual in a spiritual way.
Yes, you can, yeah. You know, like I tell kids that, you know, that's starting out singing, I say, well, you know, for one thing, just remember when you're singing, you know, your voice is loaned to you from God, you know. So don't ever think it's because, like, you know, I've had times when people tell me, like, man, you know, your voice really helped me through some times or whatever. And I tell them, well, it ain't me, you know, it's the God and me touching the God in you. I couldn't take, you know, responsibility for that.
But you have to take responsibility for keeping it in good working order.
That, right.
A lot of our listeners will be astonished to discover that you're 70 years old.
I am.
You shouldn't sound as good as you do.
Well, you know, like you say 70, you know, but in the Bible, people used to live 800 and 900 years, so I feel like I'm still a baby.
Okay.
I'm just starting out.
Yeah, so in Methuselah's terms, you've got a baby voice. But
yeah.
Do you look after it in any particular way?
Just have to rest it. You know, I mean, I've had, during the years, I've had like a nodule. I've had bruised vocal cords and trying to sing over loud bands and all, you know. You just got to rest it and, you know, and that's about it.
Yes. One of the other things we should talk about in connection with this particular album is the producer, Joe Henry.
Joe Henry, yeah.
How did you work together to get the sound of the album right?
Well, we recorded it in his basement. He has a studio in his basement, and all the musicians were there. And I don't know if you heard, but we did the whole thing in 5 days. Mm. Had you heard that?
Yes, I had, yeah. Yes.
I mean, you know, so like it was a labor of love for everybody. Everybody that was there wanted to be there and wanted to be a part of it. And with his directions, you know, and Alan Toussaint's influence, and it was a joyful time.
It must be intimidating for Joe Henry to have Alan Toussaint in the room.
No, he's worked with Alan a lot. You know, that's why what happened when the record company said they wanted to use Joe Henry. And they said, well, you know, Joe Henry recorded Alan. I said, well, hey, that's a great idea to get Alan involved in it. Because, like I said, it's our 50-year anniversary by him recording my first song back in 1960.
Yeah, let's talk about, while we're talking about producers, let's mention Daniel Lanois.
Yep.
Because he was responsible, well, you were responsible, but he was overseeing your work on Yellow Moon.
Yeah.
Well, and there's somebody else who brings a sound with him, doesn't he?
Yeah, you know, he was trying to get the... A lot of people, when they recorded the Neville's, were trying to get the live sound. He came the closest to doing it, you know. And the thing about Daniel, he brings out what's already there, you know. And you get a feeling from him, you know. As a matter of fact, we've been talking with Daniel about doing another Neville Brothers thing coming up.
So, oh, that would be great.
Yeah.
Yellow Moon was such a big hit.
It was, yeah.
Did you see that coming?
We felt it, you know. Like, we were in the studio, he turned this house in New Orleans on St. Charles Street into a studio. And he had the feeling, you know, he had like moss hanging from everywhere, like we were in the swamp. You know, we had owls and bobcats. So, you know, we had the feeling in it, you know.
And, of course, the figure of your uncle, Chief Jolly,
yeah,
is ever-present in that album, too.
No doubt, yeah. I mean, well, thing about it, he was all of our mentor, you know. He was a piano player and singer. He sang at that barrel house piano, and he had a gravelly-type hip voice, you know. And through the years, we had been together, two or three of us, at one time, as teenagers coming up from the 50s on. My uncle was also the chief of the Wild Chopper Tulas Mardi Gras Indians. And he wanted to put his songs to music, and he called all of us down in New Orleans to do it. You know, I was already there, Art was there, and Charles had moved down from had been living in New York, and he came back down for that. And that was 1976, and he told us that you know, he thought our parents would like to see all of us together. So 1977, Art and Cyril were with the Meters. They quit the Meters and came on in New Orleans, and we started the Neville Brothers.
So it was really Chief Jolly's idea.
Yeah, I mean, we had all talked about it before, you know, but he just put it in motion, you know.
Mm. It's apparent from everything you said how close-knit the musical community of New Orleans is. And you haven't lived there since Katrina in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
That must be difficult.
It was difficult. I mean, it was like the worst. I mean, you know, things happening all over the world, but that was home, you know, and like to be watching that. And thing about it, I know we had been knowing it was possible for a lot of years because New Orleans is sitting, you know, it's 8 feet below sea level, sitting in a bowl surrounded by water. And we're in Hurricane Alley, you know. So it was, you know, bound to happen. But it devastated New Orleans. But, you know, New Orleans is a strong-minded city, and the people, the spirit is there, you know, because they're coming back strong. A lot of places will never be back, but what is back, it's there, you know. And the music could never die. The music was living on, but the musicians were all scattered all over. And we'd see each other out on the road, you know, and everybody had the same look in their eyes, you know. Wow, man. You know, everybody was devastated.
Mm. I know your home was flooded.
Yeah, me and three of my kids, my sister, one of my brothers.
Will you move back there, do you think, Aaron?
I have a place across the lake from New Orleans in Covington, Louisiana. It's on a little higher ground. Because I just got tired of running, you know. Mm. Every time a hurricane comes, you got to get out because, you know, it could happen again.
Mm. We should listen to another song from the album. I would like us to hear I Am a Pilgrim.
Oh, yeah, I love that. Yeah.
Which is a Sam Cooke song, but you've taken it in quite a specific direction.
Yeah, well, it's got my cowboy influence in it, you know.
This is how Hank Williams might have done the song.
Yeah.
And it works. It sounds exactly like a Hank Williams song.
Oh, yeah, I love Hank Williams.
But why did you decide to do it this way?
I think it was the demo I had was by Swan Silvertones, and they did it like that, you know.
Mm.
And I said, well, I like this, you know. You know, I like the way Sam did it, too, but this is a different thing for me to, you know. I have done, you know, country and western before with the Grand Tour and all, you know, and I Fall to Pieces with Trisha Yearwood.
Yes, of course.
So this was like going home with me, for me, you know.
Okay. Aaron Neville, thank you very much for being my guest on The Music Show.
Well, thank you for having me.
I am a pilgrim and a stranger traveling through this worrisome land. I got a home built in that yonder city, good Lord, and it's not made by hand. I got a mother, a sister, and a father. Done gone on now to the other shore, and I'm determined to go and see them, good Lord, and to live with them forevermore. When I go down to the river of Jordan just to bathe my weary soul, if I can but touch the hem of his garment, good Lord, that I know you'll make me whole. And cry, you know, over me, 'cause you know that I've gone to rest. Yes, I'm a pilgrim and I'm a stranger traveling through this worrisome land. I got a home in that yonder city, good Lord. And it's not made by hand.
That was Aaron Neville and a Sam Cooke song, I Am a Pilgrim. It's from his album I Know I've Been Changed, which was released earlier this year, a collection of classic gospel songs. And it was produced by Alan Toussaint, who, of course, was another guest on the music show this year. I was talking to Aaron Neville in May.